Got another note from our Loftus family serving in Hungary this past week. Greetings from Budapest. This fall, the newspapers and magazines of Central and Eastern Europe were filled with flashback stories of the fall of communism in 1989. Recently, an unusually powerful article emerged. In 1943, a young Jewish mother trapped in Poland placed her infant son in the arms of a childless Catholic neighbor and begged her to save her tiny son's life. When the neighbor hesitated, the desperate mother persisted, "You believe in Jesus, who was a Jew, so try and save my Jewish baby for the Jew in whom you say you believe. Maybe one day he will grow up to be a priest." Shocked at the thought of a Jew becoming a Catholic priest, the Polish neighbor nevertheless took the baby boy into her home. The Jewish mother and the rest of her family perished in the Nazi death camps. 35 years later, Father Wexler stood by the side of his dying Polish mother, only to hear her shocking deathbed confession of his true heritage. While his mother and his adopted parents had acted out of love, Father Wexler was now stunned and confused. His entire occupation was now based on a completely false understanding of his true identity. Imagine the trauma in this man's heart and mind. He no longer knew which version of God he must relate to. Is he the God of the Jew or the God of the Roman Church? And he no longer knew who he should be for God and how he should serve God. In fact, Joe Beth added in the letter here how this young man has recently appealed to the Vatican for help to resolve his personal moral dilemma and identity crisis. She ends the letter by saying, "Pray for us as we lead many of the hopeless people here to discover their true identity in Jesus Christ. Their only hope is to appeal to the true great high priest, Jesus Christ." But could you imagine this man now no longer having any bearings in life with that shocking announcement? He no longer knows how he fits into the drama of life. Everything he thought he was, he wasn't. Everything he thought he knew about God now is different in many ways because of his true genealogy. I imagine if you asked 1,000 people that come through these auditorium doors on a Sunday morning the questions, who are you in the sight of God? What kind of person will God use? I imagine we'd get 1,000 different answers. This morning I want to introduce you to a man who had the answer. His name was Nehemiah. He knew who he was. He seemed to have an intuitive sense of what kind of person God was looking to use. But I want to say something about this man that may surprise you, it may not, before we even launch into a study, which will only cover the first phrase of verse 1. And that is this: Nehemiah was an ordinary man. Nehemiah, the son of Hakaliah. Can't get any more ordinary than that. He was run-of-the-mill. He was common stock. He had a good job. As we'll see later, he had steady income. He had respect. But something happened one day that jarred his world, that seemed to remind him of who he truly was. And the rest of the book that bears his name simply records what an ordinary person can become when fully surrendered to a sovereign God. Before we get too much further, let's back up for a moment and take a look at the historical setting and the background of history. Now, when I say that, I can imagine your eyes glazing over. Oh, wonderful history. That's why I came this morning. This past Christmas, I gave my wife a beautiful bracelet. And I knew it was going to be a special gift to her. And when I got it, it came, of course, with an exquisite-looking box. Black velvet. And you, even when you open the box up, the inside was lined in something that looked real satiny. Beautiful, beautiful box. I knew that even when my wife began to open it, she would already be very excited. Some of you wives are saying, honey, he's preaching to you. Now take note. Listen up. And just as I imagined, it occurred. But my wife to this day, it's been now several weeks, has not yet thanked me for the box. Nor did she take that bracelet out and set it aside and try to strap the box onto her wrist. If she had of, we would have called for help. No, she threw it away. The value of the box was in introducing the object. That's history. The testimony of Nehemiah shines with brilliance. The remarkable nature of his integrity is even more remarkable when you notice that it comes from such a dark setting. In fact, if we could travel back in time, the reason this ordinary man seems so unusual and extraordinary was because of his setting and his times. He lived in a generation of Jews who had been saying now for 90 years, it'll never be done. It can't be done. We can't do it. We've been in captivity now for generations, even though Cyrus said we could go back. Zerubbabel went, he tried, he failed. We knew it. Ezra went back and tried to restore. He never fully accomplished the job, and we just can't do it. We're stuck here. In fact, if you go to one of the Psalms and you read, you get a picture of the mentality of the Jew who is living in this tragic era of time because of their disobedience to God. Even though he was allowing them to be restored, listen, as this gives us the historical setting, by the rivers of Babylon, there we sat down and wept when we remembered Jerusalem. Upon the willows in the midst of it, we hung our harps, for there our captors demanded of us songs and our tormentors mirth, saying, sing us one of the songs of Zion. How can we sing the Lord's song in a foreign land? If I forget you, O Jerusalem, may my right hand forget her skill. May my tongue cling to the roof of my mouth. If I do not remember you, if I do not exalt Jerusalem above my chief joy. See, now for years there hadn't been any singing. They had hung their harps on the willow trees. No joy. They were sobbing, as it were, with national grief. They had disobeyed the Lord. They had ignored his word. Now, no joy. How could we ever sing in a foreign land? And when a group of people goes back to restore it, it never really happens. The walls of Jerusalem are broken down. The gates are burned. We are a laughing stock to the nations around us. Who would be our champion? Nehemiah? I'm convinced that the average response to his name, as you look at it as it's introduced in the first verse of the first chapter, would have been, who's he? Nehemiah. This is the memoir of Nehemiah. This is the diary, the only book we have in this kind of form. These are the words of Nehemiah, the son of Hakaliah. That's, by the way, when they introduce anybody in the Old Testament, especially including our own Lord in the Old Testament, even though we're in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John until the cross, they always put the good stuff first. They lay out the genealogy. They show the relationship of people. You look at him. Who are you? I am the son of Hakaliah. Who cares? He wasn't a Levite. He wasn't a member of Israel's priestly tribe. He didn't have royal blood flowing through his veins. He didn't have any physical strength we read of. He didn't have any leadership experience. In fact, you won't even find his father's name anywhere else in the Bible. Nehemiah, the son of Hakaliah. So what? He will be our champion. He is nothing special or spectacular. He is just common clay. Therein lies the challenge of this book. The book of Nehemiah leaves us with an example. First of all, an example of how God can take a nobody and turn him into a somebody. An example, as we'll see, of what God can do with a person who doesn't really care who gets the credit. An example of a person who can become something if they belong to the living God. If they understand that first and foremost their identity is they are one of His. Second, this book leaves us without excuse. Well, if God can use him, God can use you. One author provoked my thinking when he said there is always a fresh need for a new Nehemiah. There are broken things everywhere. Burned gates are commonplace. Broken hearts, homes, dreams, values lie shattered on the floor. Morals are corroding at an ever-hastening pace. Every generation needs somebody who will rebuild and restore. And the one that God chooses is an ordinary man or woman. You know, men and women, we have lost sight, I think, of what it takes to be the kind of person, the kind of quality that God could use to be a builder or a restorer. And because of our culture, we have been enamored by fame and popularity and political office and money and personality and glamour, and they have all replaced what we will see emerge in our study through this book of this ordinary man's life. One word, if I could summarize it all in a word, it would be character. For decades now, the heroes of our culture have been athletic figures. They have been entertainment figures. They've been media creations of one sort or another. They've been political leaders. And in my mind and in my summation, men and women, most of this have this in common. They utterly lack character. The key to being an ordinary man or a woman used in an extraordinary way or in an ordinary way by a sovereign God is directly related in your crumbling world to your character. Jeremiah laments in his generation what is missing in ours. Run to and fro through the streets of Jerusalem and look now in the open square and see if you can find a man who does justice. See if you can find a man who seeks the truth. The answer, of course, comes back. There isn't anybody like that. Ezekiel records the thought of God and saying, "And I searched for a man among them who should build up the wall, that is, restore his generation and stand in the gap before me, but I found no one." The church today is at its neediest hour when it needs men and women, ordinary men and women, who will be able to rebuild and restore. And it, at the same time as attempting to impact our culture by clever methods, God will impact our culture with Christian character. Dr. Sumi once wrote it this way: while the church is looking for better methods, God is looking for better men. Aristophanes was moving people through his drama, his brilliant comedy. Herodotus was influencing a generation with his insightful history. Plato and Socrates were moving their world with their philosophy. Why not bring one of those men into the rank and file of faith in Abraham's God and use them? All of those men lived at the same time Nehemiah lived. Why take Nehemiah, the son of Hakaliah? Because God doesn't choose many mighty or many noble. He chooses ordinary clay who in the hand of God are used to move the world. I compiled a list from other authors that I have been reading in preparation, and my own I have tagged on and have come up with 26 characteristics of an ordinary man seen in the life of Nehemiah. I'm going to read them too fast for you. Number one, he was compassionate. Number two, he prayed. By the way, there are 11 prayers in this book, and next Lord's Day we're going to begin our study of his wonderful prayer. Probably take a few Sundays to work our way through it. Three, he knew the Old Testament scriptures. Four, he had a definite goal. Five, when something had to be done, he went directly to the person who could do something about it. Now, isn't that amazing? Six, he depended on God. Seven, he knew what to ask for. Eight, he sized up the job before he started the work. Nine, he knew how to delegate work. 10, he knew how to delegate responsibility. 11, he didn't let opposition from those on the outside stop him. 12, he knew how to settle differences among people. 13, he was an example of his own message. 14, he was a man of keen discernment. 15, he didn't let personal criticism stop him. 16, he did not excuse wrongdoing regardless of who did it. 17, he had respect for authority. 18, he gave God the credit for accomplishment. 19, he put the emphasis on spiritual life. 20, he required a higher standard for those who served in spiritual leadership. 21, he refused to accommodate sin even when sinful behavior had become culturally acceptable. 22, he took his personal distress and hurt to God. 23, he was willing to suffer injustice for the sake of God's work. 24, he stayed focused on the goal and did not succumb to the dangers, the risks, the obstacles, and the hardships that stood in his way. 25, he had moral strength and courage when everybody around him didn't. 26, he didn't give up when everybody else around him had. Does it occur to you when I read that kind of list that that is not to be the exception among us, but the rule? That's why, even though he was an ordinary man, he seems even to us beyond reach. And I think it's because of this. I can read that list and, you know, nothing dramatic. Easy to observe. Easy to understand. Yeah, he was compassionate. Yeah, he knew the word. Yeah, he prayed. Yeah, he didn't go. Yeah. I've heard it all before. These characteristics are easy to observe. They are easy to understand. They are impossible to apply. Unless there is a vital relationship between you and your living God. Maybe that's why this book begins with Nehemiah on his knees. Do you know what God wants you to be? An ordinary person. That's all. An ordinary man, an ordinary woman. Do you find that a little insulting? Well, I'm not ordinary. I'm above average. Do you find that relieving? Oh, I'm glad to hear that. Because I could never be anything other than ordinary. You'll find encouragement in this man's life. Let me close by asking two questions, just sort of an overview, summary kind of question, and then next Lord's Day we'll start with verse 2. First, what is it in your life that lies in ruins today? The elders, we have begun a Thursday morning prayer and Bible study where we throw the text out that I'll be preaching on, and it's delightful to meet with these men. One of the men said this as we studied and looked at this book as an overview early Thursday morning. He said, I never read the book of Nehemiah without asking myself the question, what is it in my life that lies in ruins today? That's a great question. Because maybe you've come in today and you wouldn't identify with Nehemiah, you would identify with the broken wall. And you know in your heart that God needs to restore and rebuild what has corroded away. And God will. He binds up the brokenhearted, He restores the fallen one. But as we study through this, and as you identify at times with Him and sometimes with the wall where God needs to repair and shore up and strengthen, I pray that He'll do it to your submissive heart. Second question, an overview here. What is it about your life that's worth reading about tomorrow? These are the memoirs of Nehemiah. I've wrestled with this myself, and is there anything worth recording? Well, if you're like me, you will quickly say no, other than just a bunch of ordinary stuff. Great. We're on the same page now. You see, none of us are going to be remembered for some incredible accomplishment. None of us are going to go down in church history as people who really made an advancement in the kingdom. We're going to be ordinary. But if our faithfulness to a faithful God emerges from the setting of ordinary stuff, then His cause is advanced in ways we cannot see. You know what you're going to be remembered for? how you show up to work and what kind of attitude you have. You're going to be remembered for your spirit. You're going to be remembered for the way you influence in little ways people around you. You that have children, you're going to be remembered like we remember our parents. I remember the basketball game. I don't remember the launching of ministries. I remember what they'll remember, that you had time to listen to their dreams. Ordinary stuff. I want to tell you, that's worth reading about. The 26th president of our nation was a hard-charging leader. Throughout his days in office, Theodore Roosevelt was either hated or admired. One admirer once said to him, "Mr. Roosevelt, you are a great man." I read he, with characteristic honesty and bluntness, replied, "No. Theodore Roosevelt is simply a plain, ordinary man who is highly motivated." That's what we need today. Plain, ordinary people motivated by the Spirit of God to do ordinary things in a way that honors Him. That, ladies and gentlemen, advances His church. That ordinary stuff that you will do this week brings honor to His name.